And welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Kicking It with Keeler here on Full Press Radio, episode number 16. Happy to be back with you this week to talk more about the world in sports. Again, I'm Ricky Keeler. You can follow me on Twitter at RickyNader555. That's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader, like in Terminator, 555. You can follow Full Press Radio on Twitter at Full Press Radio. You can follow Full Press Coverage at FP Coverage. On Twitter, we got sites for NBA, we got MLB, NFL, NHL. Now we got a new NHL podcast, a new NHL site. Hopefully, we'll talk some hockey at some point on the show. They'll have to educate me a little bit on hockey, so maybe we'll do that in that conversation. We have wrestling, XFL, so much to get into with the Full Press family, so definitely check that out. We have podcasts, it seems, every day, so something to take a look at. Going forward, if you any sport, we probably have a podcast set up or getting a podcast set up. Ian Glendon doing a great job running the network. You can catch Ian and Mike Debate Show, FPC Radio Live, every weekday morning. So definitely want to check that out as well. We got a lot of topics coming up today. We're going to talk a little Cleveland Cavaliers later on in the show. James Mastrucci from This Is Believe Land is going to join me. And we're going to look at the John Beilein step resigning as head coach. We'll look at Colin Sexton. We'll look at who should be the next coach. Who the Cavs should draft, why they traded for Andre Drummond. A lot of different things in Cleveland. Maybe they're going to have another lottery pick. It doesn't matter what pick they're going to get. They didn't have good luck in the lottery last year. We're going to get into that. We'll talk about some XFL later, week two, heading into week three. The NBA All-Star Game, how the weekend went down. We'll get into that after my conversation with James. The NFL's changing their playoff format, and I don't mind it. I really don't. We'll maybe get into that at this first part of the show as well. But of course, we have to start with a gift that keeps on giving, the Houston Astros. So much has happened this week in the whole sign-stealing scandal. You've had Commissioner Manfred speak twice. You've had Tony Clark, the head of the Players Union, speak at Mets Camp on Wednesday. I don't think really Tony Clark helped himself that well. It's just a strange situation. You could see the power that the Players Union has in baseball. I get it. You have to protect everybody. But to have blanket immunity for every player, I don't think made a lot of sense. That isn't something you should really criticize Rob Manfred for because it's not in his control. I said it at the time of the punishments. There wasn't much Rob Manfred could do at the time. Again, the owner fine was the max you can give. I would have took away international money in addition to the draft picks just so it's not, there's not a loophole where you can get your farm system enhanced just by signing a bunch of international guys just because you don't have top draft picks anyway. But from seeing the lack of contrite apologies this week from the Astros, you got Carlos Correa talking to Ken Rosenthal and firing back at Cody Bellinger. You have Dusty Baker talking about Nick Markakis. Oh, Markakis doesn't talk much. Well, why do you think, Dusty, that Markakis doesn't talk much? Because he has some things to say. Mike Trout even made comments on the sign stealing this week. You never see Mike Trout make any comments. Aaron Judge is pissed off. Giancarlo Stanton's pissed off. There's really just, I know it's not just a Yankee and Dodger thing. It's really everybody outside of Houston, and you've seen J.D. Martinez, the Red Sox, really not get into it as much. Players are angry. And you're going to see this when they have the next CBA after 2021, that there might be something involving possible discipline for these kind of things. Because I don't think that baseball realized how outraged the players would be. But there is blame on Commissioner Manfred. And there is blame for he accidentally, I think, but it's still a bad look for baseball. When he had the interview with Carl Ravitch on Sunday, and he called the World Series trophy a piece of metal. You can't do that. You can't. Because if I'm a player, I'm like, so all this hard work, and you're basically telling me all I'm playing for is a piece of metal. It's not what you want. Because watch, Rob Manfred might have to hand that trophy to Justin Turner. And that's going to be the most awkward handoff if the Dodgers win the World Series of all time. You can't do that. The other thing, I tweeted this out on my account on Sunday. When he told Ravitch that they had intestinal fortitude to share results, even though they weren't pretty. So you're going to praise your own own team because stuff you found wasn't great, but I had so much courage to share it. So much courage. And you didn't do it? Like, what, were you not going to do it? You're going to cover it up even more? You don't get credit for that, Commissioner. You just don't. I won't give you a pat on the back for that. But the one thing that struck me, and you've got Correa on last Saturday, telling Ken Rosenthal we didn't really cheat in 18. First off, for the Astros to keep the two employees that were a part of Codebreaker, but then Manfred saying, oh, I don't know how the reporters got that email, the private email. How does James Click, the new general manager, keep both those guys? I get it. He wanted to be fair to them, but if you want to rid your team of every possible sign-stealing scandal thing as you could, I mean, you can't trade everybody, obviously, and you wouldn't do it. But you could have got rid of those two employees. I don't advocate firing, but that just seemed odd to me. And you look at what Manfred said on Tuesday. There was acknowledgement from players that they cheated in a 17 postseason. And I was not one for taking the title away. Because I view it as everybody knows what happened. It's obvious. Like, you can't erase history. You can't take that memory out of the back of your minds. And every Astro fan out there is still going to talk about the 17 championship. The players basically have said, well, we're still 17 champions. It doesn't matter. If I'm Manfred now, I take it away. You've seen the outrage of the players, the other players around the league. We'll see what he does with the Red Sox. Because the Red Sox investigation is going on next week, and that's a surprise because all we thought with the Red Sox investigation was going to be done by spring training. Then we thought it was going to be done by the end of this week, the end of last week, then the end of this week. Now it's the end of next week. Because Manfred said they have to do re-interviews. So I wonder if Manfred's going to be a lot harder on the Red Sox now. Because of the backlash from the Astros. But again, we don't know what the Red Sox did. We know they allegedly used the video room, the replay room. But to what extent did they use it? And is it worthy enough of taking the 18 title? We don't know. But we know what the Astros, like, if you take away the Red Sox 18 title, you have to take the Astros 17 title, in my opinion. Because what the Astros would have done might be worse than what the Red Sox did. I understand for baseball, it's a bad look having two of your last three titles vacated, but you've got to fix this. I mean, it's clear Rob Manfred, in a way, screwed up. He didn't screw up fully. I'm not saying he's 100% to blame. I think Tony Clark is partially to blame because if you're the players, you can go to Tony Clark and be outraged about what happened. And Tony Clark will tell you we represent everybody, but I feel like you could have done a better job at the investigation if you found like the two or three players that were the big users of the trash cans. Because Correa was starting to list, like, Altuve doesn't really use the trash can. Reddick doesn't use the trash can. Kemp doesn't use the trash can. I said, okay, keep going. We got three players down. We got about 20 or so to go. You keep talking players. We can make this a little bit easier. I thought it was a bad look with the apology from Jump Street, as I talked about last week. I just don't sense any real remorse from a lot of the Astros players. I don't. I feel like they're sorry they got caught. They're not sorry for what they did. I think those are two totally different things. It's the way it is. Look, the Astros are going to be really good this year. They're going to be right back in the playoffs again. And if they win the title this year, then some of the sting kind of goes away because they can't be cheating now after they were cheating in 17, part of 18. A lot of people think 19. And the Yankee players think that too. I'm not willing to go there. I need proof to do that, but I understand people are outraged. Like I've said from the beginning, I write about the Yankees. I don't view that the Astros, like the Yankees, I don't view the Yankees should get the 17 pennant. The Astros were a better team then, and the Yankees didn't hit in 17. I thought the Astros also were the better team in this past October series. They pitched better than the Yankees. But you look around the league this year, the Astros aren't really the second best team in the American League. I think because you look at what the Rays did last year, they took the Astros to five, and it really Houston won that series because of two great pitching performances by Gerrit Cole. So Tampa Bay, I think if Blake Snell is healthy, jumps ahead of them. So you might have the two best teams in the American League East, believe it or not. And it's not the Red Sox. But the Astros are going to be good. I think the question is going to be how they're handling the road. And you had Manfred come out this week also and say, like, we're going to go harsher retaliations for hit by pitches. I'm not advocating hitting anybody in the head. I would never go that route. But now you're telling me if I'm an opposing pitcher, I can't even throw inside at them. Like, that's an advantage to the Astros. And I can understand players wanting to get revenge to a degree. I don't think they would go out and try to beat them all in the head. But, like, to me, the interesting part's going to be when they play Oakland that first week. Does Mike Fiers pitch against the Astros in Oakland and what happens? I think that is really interesting. When Houston comes to New York in June, because they don't come to the Bronx till September to play the Yankees, but they go to play the Mets in June. I can see a lot of Yankee fans packing Citi Field to see that game. When Houston goes to D.C. and Dusty Baker has to manage against the Nationals 4th of July. When the Astros, some of them go to the All-Star game. And where's the All-Star game this year? Dodger Stadium, where they will get booed is an understatement. Some of those Astros players, they are going to get extremely booed out of that stadium. And I don't know how much they're going to be liked by their own All-Star peers. I really don't. I think some of this will go away. But this story just continues to have a life of its own. And you will get, if you get more information on top of more information on top of more information, it's not going to be pretty. I think it's going to calm down this week because you have spring training games starting on Friday. Most of them will start Saturday, where we're going to have games to talk about. We're going to have experience to talk about. Like, we're going to have action to look at. I think spring training games are great for, like, the first 2 or 3 weeks. And then by mid-March, you're like, okay, can regular season games start back up again? And I think when the Red Sox investigation results come back, then you'll see this pop up again. But for the sport, this is not great for the sport. I know people say, well, puts baseball in the center of attention. I know no publicity is bad publicity, but it's not a good look, I think, for the Astros, and I think it's a bad look as this story continues to unravel. Also, bad news in baseball coming out Thursday morning, if you're an Indians fan. Carlos Carrasco is getting an MRI on his right leg, and they're already down Mike Clevinger in that rotation, so you wonder now with no Clevinger for a few months, who knows what about Carrasco? They're down two starting pitchers. They traded Corey Kluber in the offseason. Did the Francisco Lindor trade rumors heat up again? The team would want Lindor for this pennant race and next pennant race. And the Indians really, right now, are not looking like the second-best team in the Central. You're looking at the White Sox. And we'll get more on the divisions and MLB preview probably next week into March. We'll do a little bit of that. We'll try to as more sports indicate. Of course, we got March Madness to look forward to. But, of course, Astros are not going away in baseball. Before we get into the NFL, I'm glad to see that Ryan Newman is out of the hospital and walking around a little bit. That was a scary thing, what happened Sunday at the Daytona 5. Well, not Sunday, actually. They rained on Sunday. So Monday at the Daytona 500, Ryan Newman's got the lead last stretch of the final lap and then has an awful crash. The sport is stunned. They're praying he's okay. Denny Hamlin wins, doesn't realize what happened, and has to apologize at his post-race press conference. But Ryan Newman, not racing this week, obviously, but at least he's okay. He's with his family. Just hopefully he gets well soon and gets back on a racetrack because that was scary to watch. If you've seen it, just the way the car flips around, it's tough to watch. And we've all remembered Dale Earnhardt. We don't want that to happen again. But luckily Ryan Newman was okay. So let's get into the NFL a little bit. Drew Brees is coming back to the Saints. No surprise there. We all thought he was either going to retire or go to the Saints. So he goes back to New Orleans. We'll see what happens with Taysom Hill. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater is gone. He'll be on a new team next year. People talk about Joe Burrow and the Bengals. To me, I know Burrow said he's got leverage. Just go play for the Bengals, man. I'm one of those people that want Eli Manning to play for the Chargers. Look, the Bengals are a bad team. It's going to be your job to change the team. When you're the first pick, you're likely going to a bad football team. And at least with the Bengals, you have Joe Mixon at running back. You have an innovative offensive coach in Zach Taylor. Yes, he had a bad first year, but Who knows in year two when he gets his guy a quarterback, how it's gonna change. They have Tyler Boyd at wide receiver. Tyler Eifert, when he's healthy, is a pretty good tight end. It's not all bad in Cincinnati. I get they've had a track record of losing and losing pretty badly. But you can be the guy that changes that franchise around. I see the lore in that as opposed to I'm going to set myself up to go to Miami or go to insert team here. Just go to the Bengals. It's the NFL draft. Like, I don't think Joe Burrow can do that power move. Again, I could be wrong. But we'll see what happens. I just don't like that he would try to get himself out of Cincinnati. But we'll talk about that more. Combine's next week as well, late next week. So we'll get to see some of the guys run their 40 and do things like that. But the big news is the change in the playoffs when the CBA comes up. They're hoping to get it in effect this year. Adam Schefter had it on Wednesday night. Where the NFL is going to have 7 playoff teams and only the first seed in each conference is going to get a bye. Now, I don't mind this. I kind of see it as a way where, like, if you look at it from a Patriots perspective, the Patriots have a 2-seed a lot, so you wonder how history would have changed itself if the Patriots didn't have a bye every single year for the past decade up until this past season. The Chiefs would have had to play this on wild card weekend as opposed to divisional round. You would have the Chiefs play the Steelers this past year, the Rams play the Packers. Rams-Packers would have been interesting. But I kind of get it, and here's why. You do have some years where, like, the 7th best team in the AFC or the NFC is like 10-6, 11-5. Remember 2000, I can only relate it from my personal perspective. The Patriots in 2008 finished 11-5, didn't make the playoffs. In this format, they would make the playoffs, albeit as a 7th seed, but they would still make it. So you want that weird circumstance, you would want them to get in as opposed to, say, in years past, the Seattle winning the division at 7-9 or 8-8, an 8-8 team getting in the playoffs, a division winner, you at least have another wild card get in. It does give a lot of advantage to the 1 seed, because obviously they have to play one fewer game. So I think it brings more meaning to the NFL season, because you want to get home field advantage even more now to get that extra week off. It does add more for the new TV contracts, which is great. So all in all, it's not a bad system. I could see why the NFL wants to go this route. And people say, well, Ricky, you like the NFL and don't like baseball potentially changing its playoff system. And here's my argument for that. Baseball to me just seems like a radical change from where they are. Like, I love the baseball format. And I like the NFL format the way it is too. But I don't think NFL is changing that much. As opposed to baseball, where it's like, hey, everybody, let's have a captain's pick after the number 1 seed where you get to pick which team you want to play. We're going to pick an 83-win team now to make the playoffs because, in my mind, it seems like we have to get Mike Trout and the Angels in the playoffs. Well, how can we get more Mike Trout in the playoffs? Let's add a couple more playoff teams so that we can have the superstar in baseball on the center stage, even though Mike Trout took the $400 million to go to the Angels knowing Angels don't have any pitching. To me, the baseball playoffs just seem like a too much of a drastic change to me than the NFL playoffs. The NFL playoffs are like a mild change. And I get it. Baseball wants to appeal to the younger generation. I mean, I'm 27, so I guess I'd still count the younger generation to a degree. But they want to appeal to like people like my brother, who's younger than me. But fact of the matter is, the younger generation is either going to like baseball or not. Like, it's become the popular thing now to hate baseball. Like, just to talk about how bad baseball is. But baseball's got to be careful not losing their original fans. Football, at least, you're going to come back to football regardless. I mean, having a 17-game season is no surprise, and I'm not really a big fan of that, but I get it. 3 preseason games now instead of 4. I get that, too. You want fewer preseason games, but you would want, obviously, 1 for the starters, 1 for all the backups, and 1 where you play your starter, like, maybe a quarter or two. So 3 is kind of, I think, the perfect formula for it. It's a weird one because some years you'll have 2 home games, some you'll have 1, but you get the extra regular season game to make the revenue, so it makes a little bit of sense. Obviously, we'll see where Tom Brady goes We still have a month for that. I can't wait for it to be over. A lot of people now think Vegas would be interesting. It would be interesting to see Tom Brady with John Gruden. I still think he's coming back to the Patriots. I know a lot of people seem not to think that. I'm going to go that route, though, and say he comes back. But a lot can change between now and March 18th. A lot can change. Which is what makes the Brady story fun and annoying all at the same time. So coming up in just a few minutes, you're going to be joined by James Mastrucci from Full Press Cavaliers. We're going to get into, again, Colin Sexton, John Beilein resigning, a trade of Andre Drummond, and who James would want as the head coach and who James would want at the top of the draft this year for the Cavaliers as the NBA starts back up this weekend. So coming up, you'll hear my conversation with James. Until then, we'll be right back after this. And joining me now here on Kicking It with Keo to talk all things Cleveland Cavaliers and the shocking coaching news this week is someone you know from This Is Believe Land. James Mastrucci is here. James, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely happy to have you. So first off, before we get into all the details and everything, just your reaction to the shocking news when you see Woj tweet this week that John Beilein just decides to step down and resign at the All-Star break.
It felt like a long time coming, just watching the team throughout the season, watching just their body language, how they're performing on the court. It just felt like something was bubbling over. Then finally, when we heard the rumors that he might not last the entire season or he might just end at the entire season, the fact that it came to a resolution so quickly was not entirely surprising to me.
And I think you look at everything that's gone down. He's had, a couple of controversies throughout the season. It just seemed like when you look at and everybody questioned if it would work as a college coach going to the NBA. It's not usually the easiest transition coming in. It just seemed like things didn't start off right from day one and just spiraled down, right?
Absolutely. There was a report in The Athletic that mentioned that he was questioning his decision to take the job back in preseason. It was very quick that things went south.
Now, did you like the hire originally, or did you want the Cavs to go a different direction?
I liked the hire because at the time I understood what direction the team was probably headed in, and that direction was trading veteran players. As much as I didn't want to see the team trade guys like Tristan Thompson or Kevin Love, I knew that the reality was it was certainly possible. I expected them, actually, to trade those two at some point during the season, and obviously they didn't. So with bringing in somebody like Beilein, my thought was that they were going to have him with their younger guys in Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter Jr., kind of help them transition from college to the NBA, kind of have that foundation, that program that can help them properly make that transition. Now, the fact that they didn't trade the veterans, they didn't go full youth movement, and they added Andre Drummond, it didn't make a whole lot of sense roster-wise. They seem to start off on the right plan, but then they ended up not, I guess, going and continuing in that direction.
It's like you said, it's definitely confusing because you thought, okay, new coach going from college, you want younger players, and it just seemed like they don't trade Kevin Love, which you don't know what the trade market is, but it's kind of confusing that Kevin Love is still there, albeit he's been a good part to those younger players, but he's still there. And then they add Andre Drummond, when you thought Andre Drummond, the last team you thought was really the Cleveland Cavaliers, which was kind of a surprise. So is it confusing to you which direction they're going? Because like you said, they have younger players, but they haven't traded any veterans to get draft picks or get things of that nature.
I don't know where they're going because half their roster is young guys with less than 2 years of experience on the team, and the other half is older veterans who would be better off on contending teams in a supporting role. So it's they're in two different directions. You have the roster essentially pulling in two different directions, or you know, two different ways, where some guys need the time and the to develop, and the other guys should probably be helping as complementary players to playoff teams. Guys like Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, Andre Drummond. But they're just, it's a mess. There's no clear direction or path. The general feeling is that the Cavaliers think they're closer to being a good team than they actually are, which if you spent any time watching the Cavaliers this season, you would find that that is entirely false.
So what did you make of the Andre Drummond trade? Because like I said just a little bit ago, when I heard Andre Drummond to the Cavaliers, I'm like, okay, what's going on here?
On one hand, I liked it because he's a good player, and he's still young. He's 26. He's on the younger side of things. On the other hand, it was confusing because at the same time, they still had Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, and I thought maybe this was a precursor to more trades. Like, they bring in Andre Drummond while sending out guys like Love and Thompson, but instead they're keeping all of them there. They have all of the big men. They have all of the centers. You know what I mean? It's they're running an offense offensive style. It's archaic, if you know what I mean. It would be better suited for 20, 30 years ago than it would be for 2020.
Do you see Drummond sticking there long term? Because I know he was not happy about being traded to the from the Pistons and had his option year coming up. How does he fit into Cleveland's long term plans then?
Now, as soon as the move came down and I saw that Andre Drummond and Kevin Love are represented by the same agency, I instantly made the connection that the future in Cleveland for both of them is tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Only because if things go right for Andre Drummond or the Cavaliers and he sees, you know, maybe signs of growth or he's able to connect with other players on the team, maybe he'll opt into his option and that will, you know, keep Kevin Love in town as well. But if things go bad, which apparently they were very bad in the very short amount of time he's been there, he could have opted out of his contract, which would then prompt Kevin Love requesting be traded. I don't know if anything is actual, just my assumption. That's just my read on the entire situation, that they're both represented by the same people. Now, even if Andre Drummond was going to opt out of his deal, he'd be giving up quite a bit of money because nobody is going to be paying him $28 million next year to play basketball. He's a great player, but he's a traditional center, and those are no longer in high demand.
So let's say, James, they put you in charge of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you got to pick the next head coach. Who do you want the Cavs to hire?
Jeez, that's a tough question. only because it's the available pool of coaches, the realistic pool. So, you know, crossing off some of the high-profile guys everybody always puts on their wish list.
Mm-hmm.
It's very small, and I would imagine they would prefer not to go back to bringing a college coach back again for a second time in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would just retreading a terrible decision they've already made would not be a great direction to go into. I imagine since they had a succession plan with J.B. Bickerstaff already in place, that's probably the direction they're going to go with, is continue with Bickerstaff. Although someone worth mentioning is Jordy Fernandez. Now, Fernandez was with the Cavaliers for a time, and he's been with Denver since 2016. They could look to extend over to Fernandez and see if he has any interest in taking over for the now departed line.
It doesn't really seem like you said, the big names I don't think would go to Cleveland to be a coach. I wouldn't go the college direction again. It just seems like you need like those top, you try to get one of those top assistants like you've seen like Memphis do, where it really just comes down, it's really more trying to pick the right player at the top of the draft than getting the head. It seems like that's more of a priority for the Cavaliers at this point than finding the perfect head coach, right?
Yeah, because whoever they go with for their next head coach, he's not going to be their long-term answer. And I didn't think John Beilein was going to be the long-term answer either. I refer to him as the guy before the guy. You know, the guy you hire to help lay the foundation before you hire the next person, when this person's time is done, to maybe take them to that next step, maybe get into the playoffs. That's what I thought the Beilein hire was going to be, but obviously it did not work out.
All right, so they make you the GM again. You just pick the head coach, and then you get the – what? It's tough to say where the Cavs are picked because obviously there's a lottery, and Cleveland did not get helped by the lottery last year. So let's say they give you could pick anybody you want in the draft, and we have the tournament coming up next month, which I'm sure will spotlight more players. Is there a player right now in this year's NBA draft in June that you really want to be on the Cavaliers?
It's such a weird situation because of the current roster makeup and how they view the futures of guys like Colin Sexton or Darius Garland or also Kevin Love, Andre Drummond. You could pretty much just take a dart and throw it randomly at a dartboard and land on a name and be like, yep, that's a good option. One name I did see in a mock draft on Bleacher Report had the Cavaliers taking LaMelo Ball, which I found very interesting because he's listed technically as a point guard, but he's a little bit taller, so he'd be more, I guess, point forward than point guard, in my opinion, which you could make that work, potentially. Have Darius Garland be either go to the bench or Sexton go to the bench, have one of those two be in the starting point guard, have Kevin Porter slide in the shooting guard role, then have Ball be this kind of hybrid point forward position. I thought that would be interesting. If they move on from some of their big men like Thompson, or well, Thompson's gone, but they move on from guys like Drummond or Love, I think James Wiseman's definitely worth a look. Because all of their big men now are on the older side, with the exception of Drummond.
Yeah, I think Wiseman is interesting. I definitely would want to go that route. I'm sure he probably is the top pick right now, despite not playing this much at Memphis this year. But I think another player you take a look at, if you want to keep Sexton and Garland as that 1-2 combo, Anthony Edwards from Georgia could just slide right in. You put him at like the 3 and see if that works, where you're not really messing too much up and still keeping the two young guards in the position that they're in.
Yeah, what I see is I believe Kevin Porter Jr. is actually probably the best young player on the team right now, so I foresee him, you know, going into the starting lineup sooner rather than later, relegating Chetty Osman to a bench role, which I believe he'd be better off in. So I'm that's just my opinion. I think Porter's going to end up being a starter with either Garland or Sexton going to the bench, possibly Sexton because he's more of a combo guard style type of guy. He can score a little bit more. Maybe you can bring him off the bench as a sixth man type of person if they wanted to run a more traditional point guard type offense with Garland. But either way, they could probably they can go in that direction either way. An interesting thing, though, if they went with the big man and they got rid of some of their older ones, they could hypothetically deploy all of Garland, Sexton, Porter, and let's say in this scenario, Anthony Edwards at the same time, which would be interesting. Or they could go with a James Wiseman also to add, you know, Garland, Porter, and Sexton. But that's just playing the hypothetical game.
You mentioned Kevin Porter being the best player, best young player you think on the Cavaliers. So I'm interested, is that just because how great Porter's been, or are you seeing not as much improvement year two from Colin Sexton as you would want?
It's because of how good Porter is. Okay. Porter might be one of the better steals of this past draft. He has everything you're looking for in a wing type player. He can make shots. He can break guys down off the dribble. He's what you want. He's exactly what you want. And unfortunately, he had that injury earlier in the year, and that probably took him off some people's radars just a little bit. But I definitely expect big things from him in the second half of the year.
Last question for you before I let you go. Your thoughts on All-Star Weekend and the whole Elam format, getting 24 points in the fourth quarter added to your score for Kobe to win the game. What did you think of it?
I thought it was an interesting concept. I liked that they did pretty much as much as they possibly could do to honor Kobe Bryant. You know, especially with them renaming the MVP trophy in honor of Kobe Bryant. I don't know if it's going to last beyond this year for a lot of the things, but anything they could do, they did, and I was very, I wouldn't say appreciative, but I was very happy they were able to kind of work that in.
Yeah, I like the format, too. The only thing I would maybe change if you want to keep that format, I mean, it is an all-star game. It is a glorified pickup game, if you will. Can we have the game not end on a free throw? I mean, that's all. I want it to end on, like, some cool James Harden or LeBron fadeaway or, like, some cool three-point shot or a lay or, like, a fancy layup, not a free throw.
I mean, ideally, that'd be great. But, I mean, sometimes it's just how it happens is a free throw. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, the World Series isn't on a strikeout either.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
So sometimes it just happens to fall that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the All-Star game's not, it can be unwatchable at times in every sport. Sometimes it's very watchable. This one was a little bit more on the watchable side, even though it ended with a free throw.
So James, tell listeners out there about This Is Believeland, what you're doing over there, and how the listeners can follow you on Twitter.
All right. This Is Believeland covers all Cleveland sports, so we're talking Indians, Browns, Cavaliers, and the monsters of the AHL. You can follow me on Twitter at Jimitude. That is JIMMMITUDE. You can also find links to This Is Believeland and to the Twitter accounts related to This Is Believeland.
Definitely want to check that out. He's got a cool Twitter name. That means you have to follow him because his Twitter account name is cool. Why wouldn't you? And he'll be talking more trades because, I mean, it's Cleveland, it's the Indians. You might be getting Francisco Lindor trade talks at some point. So James is going to be an expert on trading younger players because that's just the way Cleveland sports is now.
I mean, the Lindor talks have been going on for 2 years and just going to keep going on throughout the year, especially with the slow start.
Absolutely. And with Clevenger injury, that's a big one too. James, again, thanks for hopping on. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for the time.
All right. Sounds good.
A special thanks to James Mastrucci from This Is Believeland for hopping on the show. A lot of news going on with the Cavaliers. And, of course, we mentioned before the Cleveland Indians. So if you want to check out all Cleveland sports, This Is Believeland is the site for you to go to. We talked with James a little bit about the NBA All-Star Game. I'll give my thoughts a little bit here. I thought the weekend was good. You had a good Rising Stars game. Miles Bridges wins MVP for that, which is kind of a surprise. You consider how loaded these teams were with John Morant, Zion Williamson, Trae Young, RJ Barrett on Team World, Doncic on Team World, of course. But Bridges had a good game. I thought Saturday night was great. I thought Aaron Gordon got robbed. I mean, when you get 550s and you dunk over Taco Fall, I don't care if you barely touch Taco Fall, you still dunked over Taco. You should win. Derek Jones is good too. My pick would have been Pat Connaughton going in. I thought he did a good job. Had that dunk where he bounced it off the backboard and then dunked it. I think he had a good case at the end. Dwight Howard fared well too. 3-point contest is always fun. My pick was Buddy Hield. He makes the last shot to beat Devin Booker and Davis Bertans in the final. So the Saturday night's always fun. No doubt about it. Regardless, I know they changed the 3-point contest a little bit around, and I had my little issue with it. But the 3-point contest was a success. Slam dunk, I think, was somewhat a success. Although, again, I thought Aaron Gordon should have won, and now he's not going to do it anymore. He's been one of the best dunkers in the contest over the last 5 to 10 years. Then you had Sunday night. Great tribute to Kobe Bryant, of course, and David Stern. By the way, also, I thought the Inside the NBA roast was funny. If you haven't watched it, go to YouTube. It was a lot of laughs. But I thought the Kobe tributes were great. The Elam format was interesting. I think it created a good meaning to it. I mean, I was shocked Team LeBron was down almost double digits going into the fourth quarter, and they found their way back. As I said earlier, I don't like that the game ended in a free throw, but I get it. I understood James' point. Well, the World Series got in a strikeout. Yeah, that's true. But it is an all-star game. I mean, could you do like you got it winning on a made shot, and you win it? You got to win by two, although the game ended with Team LeBron winning by two. There's got to be a way you can somewhat change that around a little bit. But all in all, if they decide to keep this format in some way, I wouldn't hate it. It does make the All-Star game somewhat more watchable. I'm not one that really watches a lot of the All-Star game because nobody even plays any defense, but I get it. It makes a lot of sense. XFL, of course, week two in the books, and I think we're starting to see the XFL, the two teams that are the favorites right now. One of them being the DC Defenders. They blew out the New York Guardians 27-0. Matt McGloin was awful in this game. 8 of 19 for 44 yards and 2 picks. I thought Cardale Jones again was really good. You look at his line, 23 of 37, 276, 2 touchdowns and a pick. And really, that number could be out better. There's a lot of drop passes in the first half, but I thought you have Tompkins, Rasheed Rice, Eli Rogers. That's a really good trio at wide receiver. And for the Guardians, it really came down to McGloin was terrible. And you heard him to Diana Rossini going in the locker room, said, "We have to change up the whole game plan." Third quarter comes out, throws a pick six. Not exactly a good look when you do that. Now, it's great coverage that ESPN's able to get that, but you hear Matt McGloin, not a good look. Not a good look. And we'll see what they do week three. They have a really tough matchup against the Battle Hawks. St. Louis, it's their home opener. First time you've seen football in St. Louis in a long time. I don't envy the Guardians in that situation. But DC is looking really good right now, and they still have a tough time running the football. You did get 12 carries for 52 yards for Donnell Pumphrey, but they need to run the ball a lot better. Nevertheless, DC's looking really good. To Seattle, the Dragons beat the Vipers 17-9. Only got 7 of 18 from Brandon Silvers, but it was really all about Keenan Reynolds made some big plays, three catches, 87 yards, and a touchdown. Quentin Flowers got the start for Tampa. It didn't really change anything, though. They are still struggling to score touchdowns. And in the end, when you don't get scores there, you're going to lose. It was really a pick six by Tampa. It was their only touchdown. Seattle had a pick six of their own, so it was really a big defensive game. But Tampa's still struggling. Now they'll go home, but they play the Roughnecks, and the Roughnecks are really good right now. So Tampa's in big trouble. Mark Trestman's club at 0-2. LA also in trouble at 0-2. They took on Dallas. Josh Johnson was back for the Wildcats. Landry Jones back for the Renegades. Dallas winning 25-18. Cameron Artis Payne had a really good game running the football. He had two touchdowns on 14 carries for 99 yards. I thought Johnson made some mistakes, missed an open receiver, was 18 of 34 for 196. Landry Jones, 28 of 40 for 305, a touchdown. He had two picks, could have had three, especially one early in the game. But you could see at least the Dallas offense was a lot better with Jones as opposed to Philip Nelson in week one. So Bob Stoops gets a win for LA. They're in big trouble at 0-2 as well. And then the Battlehawks played well in a loss to the Roughnecks, 28-24. PJ Walker looking like the MVP early on, 20 of 31, 170, three touchdowns, also ran for 27 yards. Cam Phillips is a catching machine. He had 10 targets, eight catches for 63 yards, and three touchdowns. He only averaged 8 yards a catch, but he did a good job in this ball game. And for the Battlehawks, Jordan Tamu was good again with his efficiency. 30 for 37, 284, three touchdowns, but did have two picks, but did run for a touchdown as well. Christian Michael's got to play a little better, only 38 yards on 15 carries, but St. Louis has played at Dallas, at Houston, and really could have been 2-0. So St. Louis, I think, has been one of the more impressive teams in that they got on the road, play a team that people thought were the favorites and won, and play a team that looks like one of the two favorites and play close. So no shame for the Battlehawks here and the Roughnecks. As I said, it's really the Defenders and the Roughnecks right now that are the two best teams after week two. Your week three schedule in the XFL, Saturday, 2 Eastern ABC, Houston against Tampa. This is basically a must-win for Tampa. They've lost their first two games on the road. It's their home opener, but Houston's rolling right now. Saturday at 5 o'clock on Fox, Dallas at Seattle, battle of 1-1. Seattle defense against Dallas's offense. Things gonna be interesting to watch here. Sunday at 3 on ESPN, the Guardians against the Battlehawks. I like St. Louis here. I need to see more consistency from McGloin, or do we see more Marquise Williams, who had that fake punt in the first half? I thought that was pretty cool. And then Sunday night, 6 o'clock, FS1, DC at LA. Must win for LA. DC to me is clicking. You did see LA do the first three-point try in XFL history, which was pretty cool. We still haven't seen the double forward pass yet, to my knowledge. So we'll see if that is implicated in week three. But Tampa and LA already with must wins here to get back on track, trying to avoid going 0-3. You want to get that win and get that extra money for your team. And of course, we'll talk with Terry Biggs more throughout the season for some XFL coverage. I also want to get into the NHL. Trade deadline is Monday. I'm not that huge of a hockey fan. Again, I want to mention we have a new Full Press NHL team. They've got a new podcast. You're going to want to check that out. We'll try to get some of those people from Full Press NHL on the show to do some hockey with us. Maybe next week with the trade deadline wrapping up this weekend on Monday. And if I had to pick a hockey team, I'm a Rangers guy. So it's really interesting when you look at the New York Rangers right now. And Henrik Lundqvist has a no-trade clause. He's got a year left in this deal. But he's not playing right now with Igor Shestorkin and Georgiev in net. Lundqvist is really the third goalie. And you have to wonder, if there is interest in Lundqvist, does he waive his no-trade clause to go try to win a cup over these last few years? So the Rangers have a good future, but they're not going to have a chance to win the Stanley Cup, you would think, while Lundqvist is under contract. Will Chris Kreider get traded? I think that'll be interesting to watch. Boston's been mentioned. I think that's a possibility. But the Rangers, of course, still in their rebuild. They are playing well, though, as of late. But they're not in cup title contention yet, but you could see the future there. But Lundqvist has been one of the more iconic New York sports figures over the last decade. I mean, he had a chance. He did get the Rangers to a Stanley Cup. He's played great in the playoffs. But it's a sad end of an era, but people love Shestorkin the way he's playing. Gorgiev's a good goalie, a good young goalie that I'm sure they want to lock up as the backup goaltender. There's at least future there at the goalie situation for the Rangers. But it's always tough dealing with a guy who's been the face of your franchise for the last decade. That's been Henrik Lundqvist. You wanted a win for him, give him that one last shot, but I don't think it's going to be here. And it seemed like, I know a lot of people in hockey have mentioned the Avalanche. I think if he went to a Western Conference team, Ranger fans could get behind Lundqvist winning a Stanley Cup. So that'll be interesting to watch. I know one of the big trades is Alec Martinez going from the Kings to Vegas. Martinez, of course, had that game-winning Stanley Cup goal for the Kings a while back. So that was an interesting trade in the world of the NHL, but a lot can change between now and Monday. College basketball, of course, we're getting near March. We're only like 3 weeks away from Selection Sunday. Championship week is pretty soon. I'm excited for that. And a big game taking place Saturday afternoon, actually. It's a noon tip. College game day is there. It'll be an hour before tip-off. And a really fun game in the Big 12. Number 3, Kansas at number 1, Baylor. Baylor, of course, beat Kansas in Fog Allen Fieldhouse earlier this year. So this game is basically for the Big 12 title. If Baylor wins, they'd have a 2-game lead. 3 if you include the head-to-head. And there are only 4 games left for Baylor in the season. So they could win the Big 12 essentially with a victory. Baylor's got a really good defense. They don't have really that big lottery pick, that marquee player. But they've held teams this year to 58 points per game. That's 3rd in the country. Jared Butler leads their team in scoring with 15.6 points per game. And we'll see if Baylor can contain the size that Kansas has. When Azubuike's playing well, it's tough to beat the Jayhawks. Devin Dotson averaging 18.4 points per game. Marcus Garrett had a good game from 3 against Oklahoma last Saturday. Does he continue that success in addition to with his way he's led the team in assists? Kansas also good defense, top 10 in the league, in the country, and points allowed at about 60, just under 61 points per game. You look at that matchup earlier this season. Again, Baylor won convincingly, 67-55. Butler led for Baylor with 22 points. For Kansas, really, they got nothing from Azubuike. 6 points, 11 rebounds, but they need more points from him in addition to the 7 blocks. Devin Dotson didn't finish in double figures. They did get 15 off the bench from Isaiah Moss, so that we'll see if Moss brings that same bench production for the Jayhawks here. But this is a huge game for Baylor, probably the biggest game for them in a long time. They could really run the table in the Big 12 with a victory. And they're one of those teams, I think, right now, I think if you had to pick a national title favorite, they're right in the mix at number 1. But it's wide open in college basketball this year. I mean, San Diego State is still undefeated. They only have 3 games left. 2 of them are at home. 1 is at Nevada before the Mountain West Conference tournament. It would not be a surprise if San Diego State went into Selection Sunday undefeated. It really wouldn't. And I think it's going to be fun to see what they can do. Of course, Obi Toppin and Dayton is still in the mix. I think the Flyers are a team to watch. The Big Ten is fun because you've seen bracketologists have 11 Big Ten teams. Locally here in the tri-state area, Rutgers is going to be a team to keep an eye on. They do not win on the road, and that's going to put them on the bubble despite having a good season. Right now they're 18-9, 9-7 in the Big Ten. They just lost to Michigan at home the other night. So they had to win that game, and their schedule is brutal down the stretch. They do get Maryland at home, who's the favorite in the Big Ten. That might help them. Maryland has won 9 in a row. They got a big win at Michigan State over the weekend. Terrapins, I think, are a team to watch in the tournament. Seton Hall, I think, has had its struggles, but I still like them a lot. The ACC, really, that three-bid league, although as of right now, they're three, I wouldn't say three bids, but three teams at the top kind of separate themselves. Although Duke got blown out by NC State on Wednesday. Yes, Duke historically struggles in Raleigh, but that's still a bad loss when you look at it. And I'm still, you have to look at Gonzaga still as that team nobody's talking about. They're number two. They haven't played anybody in a long time, but it's always scary when Gonzaga's right under the radar and still in that mix. So I wouldn't count out Gonzaga, but we're going to get into a lot more. We'll have some extensive coverage during championship week. We'll, of course, do our NCAA March Madness preview. I'm excited to do that, but Gonzaga's next test is going to be at BYU. That game is going to be on Saturday, actually, 10 o'clock on ESPN2. So BYU is a really good team. They're ranked in the top 25, and Gonzaga's offense is really good. Second best in the country at under 89 points per game. So we'll see what the Bulldogs bring to the table. But an exciting weekend in March Madness. In terms of basketball, I mentioned Kansas and Baylor on Saturday. Again, that's the marquee game. But other games to keep an eye on Saturday, NC State will try to knock off Florida State, too, after beating Duke on Wednesday. Oregon and Arizona in the Pac-12 and Tucson on ESPN. I think that's going to be a fun game. Gonzaga BYU is good late Saturday. And then on Sunday at 4 o'clock on CBS, Maryland at Ohio State. Buckeyes had a rough start to the Big Ten, but they're back in the top 25, 7-7 in the conference. They'll probably get in the tournament, but a big chance for Ohio State to enhance its resume. And then on FS1, same time, Butler at Creighton. And keep an eye on the Blue Jays here. We talk about Seton Hall. We talk about Villanova. Creighton is right there in the mix in terms of contenders in the Big East. Tyshawn Alexander is averaging almost 17 a game. Creighton, I think, has gone really under the radar. They've won 4 in a row. They've beaten Seton Hall already this year in the Prudential Center. They'll get Seton Hall to end the season. Their last 4 games after this game against Butler, they have at St. John's, who struggled, Georgetown at home, and then Seton Hall at home. Creighton could win the Big East. But that's our show for this week. Again, thank you to all those who have tuned in this week. We really appreciate it. Again, we are in a bunch of different places, and I forgot to mention the intro. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher Radio. We're on, go to our Megaphone page. Just go to Megaphone, search Kicking It With Keeler. All the episodes are there. If you missed anything, feel free to check it out. Again, follow me on Twitter, at RickNader555. That's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader like in Terminator 555. You can follow us on Twitter, at Full Press Radio, at FP Coverage on Twitter. And we have so many different things that you're going to want to check out. I mentioned at the top of the show, we got a new hockey site, which is awesome. MLB, NHL, NBA, NFL, XFL. We got everything. We have great shows as well. We have certain team podcasts starting up. I know there's like a Cowboys podcast now, an XFL podcast. There's wrestling podcasts. We got everything. NHL podcast. And hopefully we'll do some hockey next. I'll try to do some hockey for you guys next week. If as long as there's not any big stories we have to cover, we're going to try to do that for you. You can also catch my segment I do on every Friday with Snowman in the Morning doing some baseball. You can catch Brian Snow, Snowman in the Morning, catch his Full Press NBA show. But that's a lot of fun. I think this week we're doing some Astros, and we're previewing the AL East. We're going to start previewing the divisions each week I'm on. I record with him every Thursday. So keep an eye out for that. You can also catch my other podcasts I do over at Pinstripe Prospects, Pinstripe Prospects Podcast, covering all things Yankees. We record that every Thursday, and that goes up on Friday. So just search Pinstripe Prospects Podcast on iTunes. Our thanks again to James Astrucci from This Is Believeland for talking to Cavaliers and talking some NBA. So from all of us here at Full Press Coverage and Full Press Radio, I'm Ricky Keeler saying hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy all the sports. We'll be back here again next Thursday night. Until then, thanks for kicking it with me, Ricky Keeler, and I'll see you next time.